This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Full lineup today. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Hashtag.
Did you say Twitter?
Twitter. It's a new Twitter that was released in Pretoria last week. Twitter.
But only in Pretoria.
Only in Pretoria, yes. How are you, gentlemen? Chad, well, Martin, George, how are you guys going?
Very well.
Yeah, good, man. No complaints. Like a weekend, everybody, except for some of the sporting capabilities of our fellow countrymen. We won't talk about that. That's for Ben Kopinski and his team. So let's get straight into it. First things first, while we got, obviously, you guys all here in studio, but next week is the Coty Awards.
Yeah.
And, so we'll obviously...
It's 8 days away now?
Yeah. And the big reveal will obviously happen at the event. I know that last year, us as a brand, we ran a really, really phenomenal, not a competition, but kind of an activation on Twitter called Coty Drag Race, and users could obviously use the various hashtags of the...
Actually award-winning, if I'm not
award
mistaken.
Award-winning, yeah.
It received a couple of accolades.
It did, the annual New Generation Social and Digital Media Awards that were held at Monte Cassino, and we won a gold in the category of Most Innovative Gamification Campaign. And it was so successful that we're doing it again this year. So we're urging our listeners to get involved and jump onto Twitter. And, this is I think, where the users can actually kind of – I know that the finalists have been selected, but the users actually have a say here. So the more they tweet about one specific vehicle or the head-to-head race-offs that happen
– well, it's not going to have a bearing on the the overall result.
No.
It's your chance to have a little bit of a say in a fun and creative way on social media, up against your friends, with your friends, with us.
Yes.
And rest of the population to see, to vote for your favorite, for what you think should win as we sort of pair them up.
So that will kick off on the 12th because the event is on the 13th. We're running head-to-head races the entire day of the 12th and the morning of the 13th.
And it's a Monday, so you don't really want to be at work, so sit on social media. You're going to anyway.
Exactly. So, our social team, the ladies back at the office have been, running.
You pick up that phone when you wake up.
What's that?
You pick up that phone when you wake up.
Exactly.
So just open Twitter.
Yeah. Absolutely. And hashtag Coty Drag Race. And it will be there again this year. So
and of course, at the event itself, the gala evening itself, there's a full-blown social media team on hand that's at the event that's going to be giving you live updates and sneak peeks and behind the scenes and that sort of stuff. So if you want to feel as if you're really there, go for it. I mean, we're going to be doing a couple of live videos, chatting to a couple of key important players.
Absolutely.
It's going to be wonderful, and you guys can experience it vicariously through our social media channels.
Absolutely. I'm just really excited to see how they're going to reveal the car this year, because, I mean, last year
was quite impressive.
When the entire bar lifted up, and I was like, wow, okay, cool. Now, there's a nice reveal. So looking forward to that. That's next week, Tuesday. Chad, obviously, a lot of articles on Auto Trader on our news and reviews section, but I see the Ferrari Portofino. You were at the launch of that.
Launch is a loose term, but the reveal of it.
Okay.
We didn't get a chance to drive it. We haven't driven it yet. Okay. So we are hoping to get a chance in it. Naturally, when a vehicle of this caliber comes along and this sort of price tag, there's like one demo vehicle and you get to take it out for a spin and that's about it. It's none of this, keep it for a week, keep it for a month, sort of get a feel for it.
I'm sure
they can't afford that. I'm sure they can, but they don't want to pay for that sort of insurance.
No, absolutely. But I mean, I'm sure this is a car that a lot of the motoring journalists would, all like to get behind the wheel of.
Who doesn't want to get behind the wheel of a Ferrari? Please. Yeah. It excites the little 5-year-old in us.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about this vehicle. You were obviously at the reveal.
I was at the reveal, and that had happened at Scuderia in Bryanston.
Okay.
Just down the road, yeah.
Yep.
And, so pulled the wraps off of it. Not much of in terms of a business presentation and that. They just explained what the vehicle is about. And in short, it's a replacement for the California T.
Okay.
So the California came out as a relatively small folding hardtop, basically your gateway into Ferrari ownership. So it was meant to be more affordable. I'm not going to say affordable, more affordable than some of the mid-engine two-seater variants and that. It offered you four seats, a folding hardtop, so you could enjoy convertible driving and coupe hardtop driving. And originally with a V8 up front, they then moved over to a V6 turbocharged one called the California T, and they revised the styling because, unfortunately, one of the real Achilles heels of the California was the fact that it was designed with one option and not the other in terms of roof up and roof down.
Oh, okay.
So it really, it looked a little ungainly with the roof up. Okay. Roof down, it looked a little better, but not quite. And then you're going to have people that say, no, but it's the other way around.
Yes.
Could never agree on it either. Portofino has been designed to look just as good with the roof up and the roof down, and it now replaces the California T.
Well, so I must say, I mean, I don't know what your guys' take on it, but I think it looks like, I mean, it really, really looks like a beautiful, beautiful vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ferrari make ugly cars.
No, they don't.
You know, I can't say as much for the Porsche 944.
Have you not seen the 612?
Yeah.
That was hideous.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, no, no. The 612 was an era best forgotten for Ferrari, sadly, and that's exactly why we sort of forget about it, is because, you know, you forget about the 456.
Yeah, but the 612 looks like it fits into the era of the old Aston Martin.
Yeah, so obviously it's a lot older, you know, in styling.
Yeah,
and
older
appeal.
In styling.
And it's not that old. It's at most 10 years old.
It's about 10.
It's about 10 years old, but it just looked very dated. But they have. They've done wonderful things now with the Portofino, and they've really made it contemporary, modern, and stylish.
And it's also it's like a four-seater as well. So, but two smaller kind of
two
adults,
plus two.
In, two plus two in the back.
Yeah, two adults and two amputees.
Okay.
Or kids.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, anyway, getting on from that. And then I see as well in the news here, after several months of total quiet, the revitalized Isuzu was formally launched as Isuzu Motor South Africa. And with the news, it would be entering the SUV market later this year with its Isuzu. And I don't know, is it a MUX or is it a MUX?
I also don't know. Do we know?
MUX.
MUX. MUX. So it's written MU lowercase dash X or hyphen.
Hyphen, yeah, uppercase X.
I mean, I'm MU X.
MUX.
I don't know. MUX. Anyway, it looks like a nice car. I mean, it looks like it's going to obviously, for the likes of the Ford Everest and the Fortuna, this is what it's going to
play. Well, I mean, it's based on like the Frontier and the Surf. It was the Toyota that had the Surf.
Well,
it looks a little bit like a Prado.
This MUX is actually the Chevy Trailblazer we all know and love. Just with Isuzu oily bits.
All right.
So instead of the Duramax diesel, it's now the Isuzu in-house diesel.
Okay.
Right, so that's the main difference. And the other thing,
it's a bit of a pity because that Duramax was special engine.
It was a beast.
Thing pulled like a steam train.
Yeah, but funny enough, it was not as capable off-road as the normal Isuzu motor.
No, I can imagine.
Because of the wider torque spread. It's a lot more peaky. The other important difference is it now finally comes with, when it arrives, it will arrive with a rear diff lock, which the Trailblazer never had. Okay. And that will actually bring it up to with the Fortuna and
Everest in terms
Everest
of off-road capability,
the Pajero Sport.
Yeah,
because I mean, the more you drive on the roads, the more you kind of see these types of vehicles. They really
there's definitely a massive shift. George will know the numbers probably a lot better than us in terms of the shift towards SUVs and away from sedans and that. So
I think it's a world trend.
Yeah, it's a world trend.
It's something that that everybody's doing.
But having travelled overseas recently, I mean, I saw in Sweden, I saw three double cabs. That was it. Three double cabs. The fourth one that I saw, and there was only one, was in Germany. The rest of them are still, they're still very heavily reliant on sedans and estates.
Yeah, but when you get a country that's got amazing public transport, then you know, what's the point of having a utility vehicle, because you don't use it that often. So when there's good public transport, you won't find SUVs.
Well, I think the SUV craze in South Africa is also due in a large part to the condition of our roads and the condition of our drivers.
Yeah. I think it's the versatility.
And lifestyle as well.
You know, somebody's a cyclist, plus they've got a family of four, plus they've got, you know, so you can use this thing for all of that stuff.
I just feel that the majority of them are not being used for those purposes, and it's more just the perceived safety and security, that the high seating position and the amount of bodywork around just sort of seems to provide. It's a case of see and be seen.
Yes.
So when I am the height of an 18-wheeler Pentechnicon truck, you know, then I feel a little safer. He can see me.
Absolutely.
Trust me, I drive a little 2-seater roadster. I know about not being seen.
Yeah.
So it's the larger vehicles just give them that sense of security, and that where they feel bullied and intimidated when they're driving a smaller hatchback in and amongst the rest of these big vehicles.
Yeah.
Eat to be eaten. If you can't beat them, join them.
Absolutely. So Isuzu has obviously done this because they want to expand their, you know, they're committed to growing their business in South Africa.
Mm.
And I see that this is the first 100% wholly owned manufacturing plant outside of Japan that they own outrightly.
Yeah, the rest of them are all part share.
Yes.
So, you know, they'll have, there were numbers here, 57% and the likes. I think that's the most that they own is like 57% of some other plants elsewhere in the world. And I was actually just saying, we were talking off air and just saying that, what does that tell you about the South African rand, the strength of our currency? If they're sitting there saying, well,
we might as well,
just buy the whole thing then.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's cheap enough. It's going for like 40%.
But
less,
again,
you know,
more
so
just more commitment that the OEMs that are investing, you know.
It's nice to see.
It is nice to see.
Despite the fact that GM have pulled out, it's nice to see that they still see the value in the Isuzu product in the country, which is about 15% market share in terms of heavy commercial and D-segment pickup and that.
Yeah.
And it's obviously worthwhile to them. They've obviously crunched the numbers, and they wouldn't be investing if they didn't see value in it. So it's really nice that it is still, we haven't seen the introduction of a actual manufacturing plant in South Africa or a new manufacturer in many years.
No.
Many years. I want to say almost 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really good to see this. It's good to see it holds positive value for
absolutely
the economy.
But I mean, I'm kind of, I don't know if you guys are finding this, but there kind of seems to be a different sense of,
every businessman I talk to says there's something about 2018 that's different. It's positive.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's numbers seem to be you know, going in the right direction.
Absolutely.
And it just seems to be a good start to 2018.
Well, I'm sure it's got a lot to do with the change in our government and the leadership, the guys that are running the country. But
new
I just want
to sweep clean.
Absolutely. But I don't know if you know. So last year, Rodrigo Duterte was sworn into power in the Philippines, and he wanted to clamp down so heavily on traffickers. So he said he vowed to kill up to 100,000 traffickers with dealers and drug users given the ultimatum by the authorities. Apparently 790,000 people kind of surrendered. So that just shows that there was a huge problem over there. But then 18 months after he took power, he's really clamped down on the illegal importation of vehicles. And what he did was he got a whole bunch of these vehicles that had been illegally imported, because the guys don't obviously want to pay the tax on them. And he took a bulldozer to them. So he pretty much, you know, has made quite a harsh statement saying that he's not prepared to... He's not prepared to take this, which I think is really good.
I don't think so.
I
think his tax is too high, and that's the reason he has to take a bulldozer to the cars, just reduce the tax, and then you won't find people importing cars.
So
illegally.
Okay, so you think that because the import taxes on vehicles are so high that guys are obviously
trying to get it under
the radar.
I think the tax is like 50% in the Philippines or something.
Well, we sit with similar, huh?
Yeah, no, fair enough, but we don't have somebody that bulldozes.
No, but you know, there is a massive grey market locally as well, and it's not all above board, because I mean, we all complain about corruption until it works for us.
Yeah,
it works in our favour, and sadly, that's just human nature.
Mm.
And if it's going to be if a packet of chips and a Coke is going to get you a slip of the finger at the Inatus office to get an illegal vehicle registered, you're going to pay it with a smile.
Oh, look, a lot of
to avoid paying 50% on top of the VAT that you've paid and the import duties and that, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, South Africa's import tax is like 20% on an imported car, but the Philippines is 40%.
I mean,
it's pretty high. You know, and he's going about it the wrong way. You know, don't drive over the cars, just reduce the freaking tax.
Yeah.
And then stimulate the economy that way. You know, it's been said, I think Winston Churchill said, You can't, you can only tax a nation to its knees,
yes.
and then you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to work in the long run.
Yeah.
Tax only works when it's used in the right way. And this is using tax in the wrong way, and this is the result.
Because, I mean, having read the article, I see in the past what they used to do is they would then take those vehicles, impound them, and then they would auction them off. So that kind of, the government recouped.
Yeah, but that's stupid. It's dumb to have to auction cars that are imported illegally.
Yeah.
You know, that's creating another little
economy. What he's saying. The guys were buying the cars at the auction were the guys that they were importing them illegally anyway.
So your import tax comes down because all you do is you pay the auction price.
Absolutely. You know. So cheaper in the long run. George, it was an absolute... you spoke about this on Gareth's show a week before last, and it was... I really want to tell the listeners about it. Can you tell us a little bit about this Aston Martin? Is it a Valkyrie? Is it called...
It's called Valkyrie.
The Valkyrie. So
it's not a very pretty car. I mean, it looks like a little bit of a bug, if you ask me.
Yes.
But this guy apparently acquired a moon rock, and took this moon rock, crushed it, and is mixing it into the paint. We haven't seen the result yet, but is going to spray paint his car with this moon dust. Now NASA says that they've accounted for all their moon rocks.
So he's obviously this must be from an asteroid or, you know, something that's been thrown to Earth from outer space.
Well, I mean, he could have got it from the Russians, I guess. If he had got into the right circles in Russia, I suppose he could have got a moon rock because,
And is it true that the moon rock actually costs more than the vehicle itself?
Yes.
I mean, you know how much money this oak must have then?
Well, they're saying it's illegal to actually
have
it in private to be held by a private individual. You know, it's technically all NASA property and... illegal to be sold.
What happens if it falls from space and lands in your
garden?
Well,
that's what they're saying it might be. It might be just one of these asteroids,
meteorites that
has fallen. And you get it in the top of Europe somewhere where these meteors fall and hit the ground, and they're like, you know, a couple of $1,000 to buy them.
It's not exactly moon rock, it's space debris, but six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Exactly, it's still going to be a really, really unique paint job. So, that was crazy, because, I mean, it's not a cheap vehicle either.
I'm sorry, when he sits down next to me in the bar and starts describing this, I'm going to be there, I'm going to be like, you're one of those guys that I actually don't want to be sitting next
to. And then another really cool story, and I know a lot of people out there, especially South Africans, are kind of pet friendly, and we all love our animals, and we put our animals in the boot of our cars, and we take them for drives. But Volvo have actually created a line of, on the back of testing, obviously with dummies. But a loose animal inside a vehicle, if there was an accident, can cause a hell of a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
So they've created a range of pet friendly kind of safety devices. For our furry friends, which I think is really lucky.
Apparently, a hurtling dog in a car can cause damage up to 40 times its weight or something.
Mm. So, I mean, that's...
You can imagine a dog hitting you.
Yeah.
Besides the damage to the poor animal.
Yeah, absolutely.
How much damage it can do to the people inside the car.
Yeah. So, I mean, just Volvo again, and I don't know, they seem to always be one step ahead and doing, you know... really cool stuff, you know.
Well, I suppose they're just sticking to their safety mantra.
But I mean, but that is
they
what
like to hold themselves as the safest car in the world.
Safest cars in the world.
I think Tesla's taking it though.
Have Tesla got a pet range of pet safety equipment?
Okay. No.
we'll have to watch that. Cool. So that's pretty much some of the news stories from the last week. And George, obviously the Formula One season is fast approaching. When is the first race? Are you
22nd
aware?
22nd to 25 March. 25 March is the main race on the Sunday.
So we're 3 weeks away from F1 kicking off.
Yes.
And obviously leading up to the first race, there's a lot of shenanigans and guys obviously launching vehicles. And I see that Mercedes-Benz launched their vehicle, but Ferrari looks like they've got something up their sleeves.
Yeah, so Mercedes didn't change their car too much. The regulations didn't change a lot from season to season. But Ferrari reckon that this is the car to beat, and have made quite a few changes. I think the most controversial change to all the teams is that halo, which Ben Kosvinsky calls a G-string.
The G-string. Well, it does look like a G-string. I just don't understand in this...
The whale tail.
But I don't know. These guys are doing crazy, crazy speed. Surely you don't want to have something that can, interfere with their vision. That is going to cause...
But then you're starting to race cars that start looking like the cars in Le Mans, like the Valkyrie. Looks like Le Mans.
I wouldn't put a glass top over, because the guys have obviously explained to me that Formula One is synonymous for open cockpit racing. But surely they could have put the I don't know, the strut or the thing that holds the top of the G-string on the side, so the drivers, you can know, see. Can see forward.
Well, I suppose peripheral vision on the side is as important as being able to see straight. You know, at the end of the day, this is starting to look like a closed cockpit car, and everyone hates it, including Toto Wolff, who's been the main team principal, to come out and say if he could take a chainsaw to the thing, he would.
He would.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't agree with that, and I don't think that there is anything aesthetically pleasing about Formula One cars anymore. It's in this quest for better and more aerodynamics. I mean, it looks like a fanning the pages of a book with that front wing on the Ferraris. I mean, there's how many?
Agree.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There must be about 6, 8 or 9 different blades to that front diffuser, and it's, I'm sorry, they're no longer attractive. Where are the beautiful cars of the 90s? And let's go even earlier. Let's go to the late 60s. You know, minimal aerodynamics. It was just an engine, four wheels, and a place for you to sit. And that was pretty much it.
And make it go as fast as it can go.
Hang on for dear life.
Absolutely.
Where the men were men.
Now, know? The interesting thing about this Halo, I've had a look at some of the competitors' cars as well. They're already starting to use it as an aerodynamic device.
And it's going to. Yeah. It is. Well, it's going to.
It's already grown some spoilers and things.
Just to get that car even more downward.
Wherever they can place an additional wing that's going to help give it downforce and help it corner better, they're going to use it. And you've just given them another place to mount it.
Yeah. Now, look, I understand the reasoning behind it. And it's not actually for rollover protection.
No, it's debris protection. Well, I mean, Fernando Alonso when
Senna,
he
Senna died this way. Senna died because of the open cockpit. The crash was caused by the steering column brake.
Yeah.
But then what actually killed him was the tire, and the tire that hit the wall came up and smacked him in the head. And the.
But I mean, is that not? I mean, It's not a nice way or a nice thing to talk about, and it's not a nice way to go, but that is motorsport, isn't it? I mean, you're getting into something that goes over 300 k's an hour, and it's, you know that you take the risk that you're going to crash, and if you crash, there's an opportunity that you might lose your life. And I'm sure these guys get into those cars every single week for training and practice, and they're doing their thing. That is a risk that they've dealt with, and it's what they do. It's what they love. It's the same as someone skiing down a slope, you know, at 150 k's an hour. You can die doing that. You can die walking across the road. So are we taking...
Well, that's now more dangerous than racing a Formula One because of all the safety that's been involved, you know? Yeah. You stand a better chance of winning the lottery than you do of dying in a Formula One now.
Well, so I don't know. Anyway, so we'll see how the season pans out. George, is there anything else happening? Are there any teams that are, you know...
Yeah, so I mean the usual suspects at the top will dominate 2018, which is obviously Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. I think Red Bull are going to be a very strong contender to Mercedes and Ferrari this year compared to 2017. I think Mercedes-Benz is in a good place because of one thing, and that's not the car.
Yeah.
The car, and it's the same sort of car as it was last year with a upscale power unit. But the thing they have to their advantage is they've got two really strong drivers.
Yeah.
They've got Lewis Hamilton, and then they've got Valtteri Bottas, who Valtteri Bottas has something on his side that Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen doesn't, and that is consistency.
Okay.
He consistently... comes in the top three, top four. Whereas Raikkonen, he's either there in the top three or he's nowhere. Crashes out or just can't fit the bill. So Sebastian Vettel has a huge task ahead of him. In order to help Ferrari get anywhere with the Constructors Championship, because with two strong drivers in Mercedes, chances are Mercedes will win the Constructors this year. With the new car that Ferrari has, Ferrari might win the Drivers' Championship, and Red Bull may be up there. Yeah. Depends on how consistent the Red Bull drivers are together.
So, I mean, even with all the changes in the safety, it's still going to be an exciting season, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All right, fantastic.
Yeah, and Daniel Ricciardo's been in the car the most over the testing season.
Yeah.
He's done the most laps in Barcelona and where they've been testing the cars. So I think he's going to come out fighting.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens in 3 weeks. I also see that the Formula One has hired the composer of several Fast and Furious movies to write the new theme tune for the motor racing organization, and again, this is the attempt to try and attract a younger audience. So we'll have to wait and see what that tune sounds like.
I'm
no, for sure.
I'm forgetting his name now. But yes, so that's not terrible. I mean, if you take a listen to the original soundtrack.
So Brian Tyler, an Emmy-nominated American, has made music for The Avengers, Age of Ultron, mm-hmm. Iron Man 3, Thor, The Dark World, and The Fast and the Furious franchise. So,
that's the only motoring-related one that they could tie in. You know, they mentioned that. And then, of course, we all think sticker spoilers and neons.
Yes.
And nitrous and unbelievable
Ferrari stuff. And we see all those spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. Well, hey. So we are going a little bit of Fast and Furious or Slow and Curious.
Yeah, and then I see that also Sky out in the UK have slashed their cost of their F1 package. This is obviously pay because it's pay-per-view in the UK to watch Formula One, and they've had to slash it because Liberty Media have launched an F1 TV channel. So they stream everything live.
Well, it's I don't know if it's available everywhere yet.
No, it's not. No. It's only in specific specific countries.
I reckon they're going to take the rights away from TV channels and then stream their own show.
And that's just crazy because, I mean, that is, again, a complete
it could be the way the world is going.
Absolutely.
Exactly. You know, where I'm not going to rely on a network, I'm going to create this myself.
And I'll just
good on F1 for doing it.
Cut out the middleman.
Cut out the middleman and I'll pay for what I want to watch, you know.
You know, the next thing that that should go this way is football and rugby, is create your own TV channels. People will subscribe to those streaming services.
Absolutely. They definitely will. I must say, though, you know,
I think that the TV station model isn't, while it is flawed, it's not entirely absurd, because if you sit there and you start adding up what you want to watch, it quickly work out a lot more expensive than what a satellite subscription would cost, you know, if you're going streaming.
Yeah, I think if you've got a family with kids and a wife and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly, you know, so you're spending, whatever, $2 a month for your Formula One, you're spending $3 a month for your, you know, for your rugby or your football or whatever, and it all starts adding up. Then you sit there and you can only watch what you've selected, and there's no variation. Whereas if you're spending that same amount on, let's say, satellite or their cable systems or something of the sorts, hey, you can flick through and maybe come across something that you haven't seen before. And it's not only when the events are up and running. In order for that model to be truly successful, they'd have to run basically 24/7 with a channel.
And they'd have to have teams that win consistently, because, I mean, if the South African Cricket Board had their own TV channel, I don't think ours would be.
No, I don't
make money. Now would they?
I'm just having a think.
I don't know if it'll happen at country level.
No.
I mean, it's got to happen at a level like Formula One, where this is an international sport.
Absolutely.
It's run by an independent body, and they've got enough money to do it. And I don't think it'll happen with every little thing. But
now, where I've noticed it is, naturally following the drifting and the likes, there's a variety of different series that are out and about there, and they've all got their own sort of streaming service, and some of them are very much subscription based. So you can subscribe to this one, and then they only basically televise the event. Maybe the build up, you know, so you're going to see practice, you're going to see qualifying, you're going to see, you know, main event. But that's it, and it's once every, let's say, 2 months. But you're paying X amount for that subscription, you know, and you're either taking a subscription and cancelling it afterwards, which is a lot of faff. You know, you want a little bit of a, you know, one debit order, that's it, over and done with. But then it's for the stuff that's not really as televised. I can understand it working. So when it comes to the larger stuff, which makes sense because, you know, you can have so many more viewers. Yeah. It's a proverbial gold mine if you sit there and you monetize it like that. It's just, I think it's just going to become a bit of a nightmare. And I'm not anti the TV station model then.
Yeah.
Well, for Formula One, I'm glad they're going that route anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the way to go. Okay, guys, I think something that, you know, was really, really big that came out last week is Geely's stake in Daimler. So why the Chinese have bought a stake in Mercedes-Benz? So Geely is now the single largest shareholder in Mercedes-Benz. And what does this mean for the car world? The German government really comments on ownership issues. I see that the Chinese have purchased nearly 10% of Mercedes. And this obviously hasn't gone unnoticed. But George, you touched on this a little bit last week. You know, you guys you eat, sleep, and breathe what happens in the industry. Let's dig into this a bit. I mean, you know, from my point of view, and what they're saying is the Chinese or Geely have bought this 10% share because they obviously want to buy some of the tech and the R&D stuff that that the likes of the German manufacturers are, you know, what they implement and what they do on a daily basis.
I mean, I think what Germany is synonymous with is quality.
Yes.
And perhaps Geely is buying some of that. you know, how do you take, you know, one of the biggest economies in the world and start to create quality products? And that's, you know, you can learn a massive amount from how Germany manufactures cars.
And why recreate the wheel where you can just go out there and buy a portion of it?
That's why the landscape of the motor industry is not as diverse as what you think it is. Yes, there's many manufacturers, but core ownership groups, there's 30. A handful. Yeah, George, you had a piece on it now recently. Yeah. Like there's not that many, because there'll be multiple brands with all their models and their variations underneath an umbrella group per se.
Yeah, well, I mean, Volvo is owned by, is it Geely as well?
Geely as well.
Yeah,
outright. Right.
They own Lotus, which is, I think, a UK. That's UK
correct.
Product.
Yeah.
So they've got you know, Volvo. They've got UK product. They've got a stake in a German product. You know, I think it's a strategy to learn how to make China's cars better.
And this is such a small percentage. While they are the largest single stakeholder, it's 9.7%. Let's round it off. Let's say it's 10%. They're not going to have that much say in what actually happens with Mercedes-Benz.
No, sure, at a board level, in terms of the business.
Their biggest benefit is actually taking... Yes. From Mercedes-Benz in terms
of the technology.
Access to the technology and that sort of stuff. And they have expressed an interest in the electric
components.
Drive systems.
Okay.
So the electric mobility programs that Mercedes-Benz are busy developing in that. Mm. And that makes sense. I mean, as our source here says, that the population and the pollution in the populated areas is actually quite high and is something that is of a large concern. So the Chinese manufacturers are being put under pressure to produce zero emission vehicles.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes sense. Let's put in a little bit of investment. We know that it's going to cost us twice that to develop what they've already developed. Yeah. Why reinvent the wheel?
Why reinvent? No, I agree. I think you're right. It's a one way street in terms of learning. They can't really dictate to the company. So.
No, absolutely. Well, I see about 2020, all brands selling new cars in China will have to ensure that 12% of its volumes are battery powered.
And that's set to increase as well.
12%.
Whereas other countries have committed to, I think, 2020 and 2022 to be, you know, fully electric.
Yeah.
And I think Sweden was one of them.
Can you see that happening though?
No, yeah. I mean, it's good to set an ambitious goal. If you're a year or two off, great.
Yeah, but I can't. That's a lot closer. I mean, 4 years, 4 or 5 years. That's 2020 is 2 years, less than 2 years away. It's 18 months away.
I think it's a nice ambitious goal. And if you don't hit it by a little bit, so what?
Something to strive for, absolutely. Yeah. But I do feel the Chinese one possibly a little more realistic.
Well, I think we're overlooking something else as well. Mm. The fact that Geely purchased Proton, which owned Lotus, I think they're working with a long-term plan at getting access to the best R&D available.
Mm. Yeah.
Now from Daimler or Mercedes, but also Lotus, because Lotus Engineering is one of the names in automotive research and development.
Yeah, especially when it comes to driveline and
I think
suspension.
With China's increasing demand for electric vehicles, they already have a huge electric vehicle market.
So with that increased demand,
I think as they boost their R&D, this should give them a head start in future.
Mm. Well, I see. I mean, it's a national imperative to hedge against rampant air pollution, and one that has started a panicked search for quality battery drivetrain solutions. Mm. Mercedes-Benz spends 150 million per day on R&D.
Mm-hmm. So a little known fact is that the Tesla Roadster, the original Tesla Roadster, was actually a Lotus Elise. With a where they pulled the engine out and they put the electric motor and batteries in,
and apparently laptop batteries as well.
Yes, so it's a little known fact that occurred, you know, that means that maybe Geely is chasing this this electric future, and maybe they're trying to learn, because if the commonality between the drive of Daimler for electric, the fact that the arguably best electric car in the world, Tesla, was modeled on a Lotus. And you can see that in the Roadster. So maybe you're absolutely right.
I mean, do we think that this kind of, I mean, look, we all know that, and George, you can unpack some of the search volumes and stuff. But we know, with the number of consumers that are coming to our sites on a on a weekly, daily basis. German cars are very, very sought after in South Africa. Because we're so loyal, do you think this is going to do anything to the market, or do you think it's just going to be business as usual for now?
We're not going to feel it. I don't think Daimler's going to feel it that much either. So I don't think you're going to see, like I said, I don't think the Geely influence is going to affect
Mercedes-Benz.
It's more
Daimler's influence in Geely than Geely influence in Daimler.
I firmly believe that, and I don't foresee any major changes. They don't have that executive decision to be able to alter too much. Not in the short term.
But on top of that as well, we've already seen that Geely plays well with others. If you look at their course of action with Volvo,
they just shoved
billions of dollars in Volvo's direction and said, "There, make it happen."
Just make it happen. And Volvo is still Volvo. As you can see from designing, safety equipment for animals,
it's still Swedish run.
So if that's the approach they're going to be using in any case,
if it's a business decision and not necessarily a world domination, situation, then they're good.
I think they're in it for China and learning.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day.
So obviously this is a drive to obviously then sell more or better electric,
improve their product, their stance in China, which as we know is one of the fastest growing and largest automotive industries in the world. They've got so many manufacturers that we hardly even hear of as well. And if they want to cement themselves as a key player as the brand in China, they really do have to look outside of their borders.
Okay.
And not just in sense of Xeroxing a couple of designs.
Yeah, absolutely. This happens all the time in the industry. There's always somebody buying for
reasons.
Shakers,
eh?
And it's nice to see that that this does happen. We know that there was a bit of a cabinet reshuffle a while ago, and although we don't discuss politics on the show, we do have a new transport minister, Mr. Bladen Zimande, and key topics that South Africans in general or people that box at that level are saying that he's going to have to focus on in his new position, one of the first things is to reduce the festive season fatalities. Second thing is obviously to enforce the laws that we have, and we can go on about this, and then they talk about collaboration. So I just wanted to touch on that quickly. Do you think he is going to come on and make a massive difference? Can we reduce the number of people that are being killed on our roads on a weekly, monthly and annual basis? I see it's something like the numbers like 38 people were dying every day over the festive period. I mean, that's shocking.
It starts long before he gets a say in the matter. This comes into pedestrian and driver education, and sadly, there's just a cultural gap in South African mindset when it comes to speeding, consideration, and drinking and driving.
I mean, we all know that there are rules of the road, but we are kind of a nation that kind of goes, well, it doesn't really apply to me.
Negotiable.
I'm fine. It's negotiable. Yeah. We can maybe get around it.
Yeah, there's wiggle room.
I think the thing that we bang on this show about on a regular basis is called visible policing.
Absolutely.
If there's anything he can do to change all three of those,
two of the three,
is visible policing. Throw the money at visible policing, and I'm not talking about cops sitting somewhere with a cardboard cutout under a bridge.
No.
Proper visible policing.
I'm talking about, and thank goodness for companies like Archer and who put pointsmen, but those are supposed to be traffic cops. Back in
the
day, 20, 30 years ago, it was a traffic cop that would have been...
Why is all of this being outsourced to private entities, private companies?
Well, we don't know.
Well, one hand washes the other.
Wash the other. And you know what? If we don't have the resource to do it, let's say the traffic enforcement are out on the highways or on the roads doing their jobs, and we need to have external third parties providing services like pointsmen. I'm all for that, but in my day-to-day commute, I didn't see a traffic cop this morning. Surely, I mean, you go to London, you've just come back from Dubai. Surely you see police visible, like the bobbies on the beach. You see them all over.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, besides the visible policing, it's also a consequence. There needs to be follow through with consequence.
Absolutely.
If there's no follow through, then, if I get caught, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
There has to be consequence.
So then I'm going to bring up the topic of also in terms of the police corruption. So, how much does it cost to get a... you know.
But that, but I think to that point as well is if the let's say there's a policeman who is being corrupt or is taking a bribe, what are the consequences for that person, and are those being followed through? So you know, it's both sides.
Yeah.
So no. The person paying the bribe should be fined, exactly, and yeah. The person accepting the bribe should be fined as well.
And I would like to see that the police officers are actually better paid and given fantastic benefits.
Absolutely.
I really would. One, they should be public servants, and it should be a little more stringent to get into the police, but then the reward should be there. So they should be paid a handsome salary.
Yep.
And things like, let's say, subsidized schooling and housing for their kids and their family and that type of thing.
Yeah.
With a no-nonsense, no-negotiation, you lose all of that.
Absolutely.
On the first sort of proof incident. Of bribery, yeah. Yes. Incident of bribery.
Or no, not even proof. Just, you know, if not there's just smoke...
Not just under suspicion. You know, you'd be humane about it, yeah? Because, you know, a little bit of a disgruntled motorist sitting there, oh, I'll have your job. I'm just going to say that I paid you 100 bucks and you took it.
Easy way of it. They put the GoPros on the chest.
As well.
Well, that's exactly.
Thing, you know, so yeah. In terms of the, you know, proof, if somebody happens to catch a cell phone video of you accepting the bribe or taking it or asking for a bribe or something, there we go. That's it. Done. Dusted. Goodbye benefits.
Yeah.
And it's going to change the way that the policing is done, but we're not prepared to spend that money on the training, on the selection process, and on being strict with them. Because, hey, what do we know about South Africa? The criminals have more rights than what we do.
Yeah, I think, you know,
and the law-abiding citizens.
But I think the conversation is coming up a hell of a lot, and I think things will start to change.
Yeah, I mean, we can already feel the positivity, but I think that's positivity with a
optimism.
Expectation of optimism or in optimism that hasn't yet seen the light. So hopefully, you know, this turns into something that is good.
Good.
And not bad. But you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I think if Blade and Zimbondi can do a good job with visible policing and consequence, like we say, then you know, he'd be able to tackle those two main
problems. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that and see what Mr. Nzimani can do for us. Gents, we're gonna quickly do a review of the Volvo S90. Martin, I think you've been driving it, or you've had a chance to drive it. Do you just want to unpack that for us? Quickly tell me a little bit about the vehicle.
Well, Volvo, the last time a Volvo carried the S90 badge was about 20 years ago, and it was stuck to the backside of a very, very conservative, old-school, boxy Volvo.
Was that like the Hearst? It looked like a Hearst.
Pretty much, square.
Okay.
And boy, how things have changed. Now, since then, we've had two generations of S80, which marked, among other things, a switch to front-wheel drive instead of the old rear-wheel drive architecture. But now this new one is a completely different kettle of fish again. Conceptually similar, but it's actually closer to the new high-tech XC90 than it is to the old S80. Now, if you remember, when was it, Chad? XC91 Car of the Year?
Two years ago.
Yeah. Now, this new S80, S90, rides on the same platform. It uses the same architecture as that Car of the Year winner. But they managed to make it even better.
Okay.
All the electronic systems are pretty much as we know it from the XC90, but they've updated the software, which means it works really well now.
I want to argue the point because I drove the V60 cross country and sat there and went, huh? Because the automated systems were just, the driver assist systems were just completely out of whack.
V60 was still the old one.
The cross country, the latest cross country.
The latest one.
The latest
it's
one,
not
yeah.
available in South Africa yet.
The V60?
No.
V60 cross country.
Yeah, that was what? Still the old generation.
Was it still?
Yep. No, they've
you're not
actually
thinking the
40. Eh?
You're not thinking the 40?
No.
Okay. So you say it is better.
It is much better. It's actually much better even than the new XC90.
Yeah, the XC90 also wasn't out of the woods though, hey?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it is better because the time that I spent with the XC90 with all these automated systems, I sat there and I said, well, it's all good and well that you guys are promoting this, but the system actually needs to work. And there are a couple of your, I don't want to say stablemates, but your direct competitors that have, you know, dialed it in a little better. You know, they're a little closer to the mark than what you are.
Now, I found exactly the same thing with the last XC90 I drove end of last year. I had the T8 on test. And stupid things like the automatic headlight control. it would start malfunctioning or just acting erratically, like flash full bright LEDs in the face of an oncoming car, to the point where I actually turned this off. Same with pilot assist. It couldn't, the self-driving capability, where it would stick to its own lane and maintain following distances and so on. And I turned that off because it kept on doing erratic things. Now, the good news is in this S80, S90, sorry,
yeah,
in this new S90, it did absolutely none of that. In fact, the driver assistance only malfunctioned once, and that's where the lane that I was driving in split into two, and the car couldn't figure out what to do with that.
Okay.
But apart from that,
that's fair enough. You know, that's sort of little anomalies that you know you need. Yeah. That's why you still need to be awake for.
Exactly. But on the whole, it actually works so much better. The nicest thing about this car is that engine. It's a 2-liter four cylinder, and I can hear Chad groaning already.
No. I know with Power Pulse technology.
But that Power Pulse makes all the difference.
Makes all the difference, eh?
You've driven it, Chad.
I've driven. You had it in the D5.
In the D5.
You had it in the D5. I think I had a D4 variant.
Okay.
So slightly lower on power.
Yeah.
But the Power Pulse technology just gave it a wonderful throttle response, and just that off idle sort of urgency, if I can put it that way, was really, really welcoming. It felt like a naturally aspirated vehicle down at the coast.
Yes, it felt actually like a large displacement naturally aspirated vehicle.
Yeah, we are with that low down torque, that
nice and linear, graduated throttle response and everything else as well.
Nice, very nice. The system itself reminded me very much of how Toyota has that new manual gearbox assistant. I'm forgetting the name of it, that basically rev matches between gears and that.
Right.
And it provided that same sort of flexibility and fluidity to the drive that just made it unconventional, but so welcoming.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a sense of nostalgia, like you say, for a big old lumbering V8 or straight six with a big displacement, but in a nice, small, efficient engine that's not loud and shouty and also not running out of steam prematurely like those engines were.
But I mean, that's it's not such a massive piece of technology that Power Pulse. I mean, it's really just compressed air to reduce turbo lag.
Yeah, it's a very, very simple principle.
Simple. Why didn't anybody think?
It's simple for you guys. It's not simple for somebody like me. So maybe just unpack it to me.
A turbocharger is an air pump.
Okay.
Okay. And it works off the exhaust gases, and there needs to be enough exhaust gases flowing in order for it to create a positive pressure that can actually be used.
Okay.
Which means that turbo cars have a set RPM or a threshold RPM from where they actually make usable power.
Okay.
And that's not from idle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, so there's, you've so got it's got to work up speed before.
It's got to get up to speed.
Turbocharger's got to spin.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And what the Power Pulse does is it basically generates compressed air and stores that, and then it pumps that in when there isn't enough exhaust gas to spin the turbo fast enough, which means that you get almost supercharger-like boost levels just off of idle, and then a smooth transition into where the turbocharger is working on its own without Power Pulse assistance.
Okay, well, I've learned something. Thank you, gentlemen.
But it's so simple. Yes. It's like,
but
it's like, duh.
It's
so so is the mousetrap. Exactly. How long has that been around?
That's true.
It's literally a little jet of air on the compressor housing just to get the turbo up to speed.
How does that cylinder get filled through the car's naturally aspirated system?
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken,
I believe it runs a compressor system
basically
that
running
fills
a little,
that, yeah,
same as your spray gun and your, you know, what you're going to fill the tires with.
Yeah.
It's basically going to run a little piston or something of the sort that's going to fill up
I'm just wondering if it's mechanically filled by the car's engine or by one of the car's flywheels or mechanical devices, or is it running off the electrical system of the car with a piston, like you say, filling that cylinder?
Actually, yeah, that drive system. Yeah, no, that's a good question.
Actually runs off the electrical system.
Is it the electrical
because
system?
Because independent it uses the same compressed air supply as the air suspension.
Ah, okay. Yes. Okay, so the air suspension supplying that cylinder.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's got a little piston
reservoir
that drives.
There will be a reservoir, and then it will just release a little bit of that pressure.
Okay.
But the end result of this, simple as it may be, and combined with that twin turbocharged setup, is beautifully linear throttle response.
Okay.
In fact, you'd have to look at something like a 3-liter BM to get a better or more linear throttle response.
I tell you where that throttle response resides is in the V8s. That's where you get low down power all the way up the rev range. You know, so what they've done is they've taken a turbocharged car and replicated what you get in a V8.
Very much so. Yeah, that sort of large displacement from engine characteristics
from the bottom.
Okay, so that's really, really, I mean, you know, sounds like an all-round, you know.
It's a beautiful car. I saw one on the road the other day home, and it's a beautiful car.
It is. You had it in a rather strange red, which is an uncommon color for it. Who would you peg as its market competitors? You know, if you're in the market for an S90, you're probably considering what?
Yeah, probably a 5-city diesel with M Sport stuff,
mm-hmm.
M Sport kit.
E-Class Merc.
I don't know. Audi A6. Yeah, maybe a Merc E250 diesel.
Yeah.
Audi A6. Possibly a V6, because this 2-liter Volvo does punch quite far above its weight. Mm. And Jag. Jag with a new XE? With a new, no, well, XF. It's a large car.
XF. Yeah.
So I think with a new Ingenium diesel, like you'd get in the Velar and those.
The 30D.
Probably.
Yeah.
Price point. What is it retailing for?
That's the funny bit. Now, generally, I drive a car and then try to guess its price.
Yes.
Now, after spending 5 days with this Volvo, I thought, well, you know what? If this car would come in at about $1 million, maybe 1.1, it should be competitive, because that's roughly what you'd pay to get similar abilities and a similar spec level in any one of the Germans or in the Jag.
Yeah.
So then I checked the price tag, and it only comes in, well, only at 840,000.
Oh, wow. So they must have really surprised you there.
Pre-spec?
Sorry?
Pre-spec or spec? Or is that same spec?
No, basic spec.
Basic spec. Okay. So
that's an odd design.
Okay.
Yeah. S90 odd design, D5 all-wheel drive.
And you naturally would have had some of the assist systems and that sort of stuff, which you probably...
The assist systems are all standard.
Are they standard?
And the cameras are standard as well.
Okay.
Okay. Well, the guys can go and check it out. Is it on in our news and reviews yet?
It will be live today.
We'll be live today. So if you want to check that out, just log on to autotrader.co.za, news and reviews, and you can go and read about the Volvo S90. Thank you very much, Martin. Awesome. Quickly, and before we get into... We were talking about that Volvo with the... not the autonomous driving, but when that lane split, the car didn't really know what to do. George, Mercedes-Benz have just recently finished quite an extensive... Well, they're still busy testing,
I think they're still busy
with
it, yeah. So what Mercedes-Benz... This is an international thing. It's not just a South African Mercedes-Benz thing. But they are using the Western Cape as their test ground for testing the autonomous driving of the Mercedes-Benz. And the reason they're doing this is because there's two main reasons why they're using the Western Cape. The first reason is pedestrians. South Africans are notorious jaywalkers.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially
a national sport in some places.
Exactly.
I think, yeah.
So I think, Mercedes-Benz have admitted it, that they need the car's radar systems to be able to recognize human beings.
Yeah.
And what better place to do it than in a country that is a serial jaywalking community? The second reason is road signs. So, you take a stop sign, for instance. You got to have the L shaped paint around the ground, and the word stop on the ground.
Yes.
Then you've got to have the sign. The sign has apparently got to be a certain distance from that particular painted area.
Yeah.
And the stop sign is a certain shape, and it's got the word stop on it, and it's in red.
Is the stop sign a hexagon throughout the universe?
I've seen round ones overseas. But nonetheless, the car needs to be able to recognize different sign shapes.
Yes.
Different lettering.
Yeah.
And then what South Africa is notorious for, apparently, and only in researching this did I find this out. And then it makes sense, because, you know, you drive around the roads all day and now you start to see this stuff.
Yes.
Mm. Is we got painted stop signs with no stop sign. Or we've got a stop sign with no paint,
with no lines,
no lines on the road.
Yeah.
So, and there's apparently a lot of that in South Africa, where the intersection and the road signage doesn't you know, match each other.
Yeah.
And so Mercedes-Benz's radar systems and cameras need to recognize the signs where and paintings on the road where there's no signs available. The other thing is speed bumps. Have you ever driven down a road and hit a speed bump without knowing that it's there?
Yes. Yeah. So 2 weeks ago,
we all have.
Yeah.
Because
we
there's
have.
No chevron.
There's no chevron.
Or
yeah.
there's chevrons at the speed bump when it's supposed to actually warn you before the speed yeah. bump.
And the speed bump isn't painted in it. Yeah. You know,
exactly.
In its
well, exactly. We were doing a trail run, long story short, and Norm, our driver, we were in a Toyota Prado. 3 days in a row, hit the same 3 speed bumps.
Blind.
Because, you know, Norm's yeah. not the sharpest oak, but there were no signs saying that
we're not going to blame Norm yet.
No, we're not going to blame Norm. We're going to blame the road signs. Yeah. But I mean, but again, if you look at it, if you think about our driving conditions, how are they going to program these vehicles to, you know, okay, we're shipping you to Australia. Now you've got to understand what a koala bear looks like, what a kangaroo looks like, what a wallaby looks like.
Exactly.
You know, South Africa, there's goats, there's sheep. You drive through the Eastern Cape. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, it's wild out there, and you know, we expect these vehicles to be put onto the roads and okay, cool, you know, it's going to drive me in happy days and it's safe. Well, it's just not going to work like that.
And there's one intersection with no stop sign.
Absolutely.
And you have a fatal accident.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
There's one on the way to Osmisburg Dam.
Exactly.
I know about that. Yeah. Look, I think Mercedes will also learn a lot more than just speed signs and speed bumps and pedestrians. They will probably also learn how to deal or teach their cars how to deal with the way South Africans cannot maintain a following distance.
Well, that as well. And the guys, the way they push in, I did see in that article that we're very synonymous. We have a lot of people that push in. So China, you know, they don't have road signs and they've got a lot of cyclists and erratic driving. But we have a lot of people who just think that three car following distance is their gap, and it's not.
I actually found that now with this Volvo, because it has this pilot assist system which tries to maintain a safe following distance.
Yeah.
And then the poppy in the Fortuna next to me sees, oh wait, I can squeeze in there, and there she goes. Yeah. And the Volvo just says, slams on the brakes and gets a new.
Yeah. As soon as it does that, it creates that chicken crossing the road effect, and it creates that snake, because now the person behind you has had to climb on their brakes.
That's correct.
And the person behind them, you've already pulled away, and the repercussion of your emergency braking situation there, which you didn't do, the Volvo did, is being thrown down for the next 15 minutes down the road, causing absolute delay and havoc as traffic starts backing up because nobody's following distance is right.
Correct.
And causes absolute havoc. Why? Because of one automated system and one poppy in a Fortuna.
Absolutely. Okay, well, so that's, I mean, I think that's something that we can unpack further, because it really is, these systems are going to have to, you know, understand every language.
We need a broader
animal.
Listenership. We need a bigger soapbox.
Absolutely, because we can scream and shout. But quickly, tell me about a vending machine for cars, please.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. Chinese Alibaba Group, everybody knows Alibaba, and Ford have partnered up to create a car vending machine in its Tmall platform. So, you know, you can arrive at this vending machine and order a car.
So obviously swipe a card of some sort which will allow you access into the banking's finance system, will let you know if you can afford it or can't afford it, and the thing will be delivered to you
right then.
So 5 minutes turnaround on buying a vehicle.
The artist's impression of what this looks like, you know, just looks like this massive parking garage where there's lifts all over the place, and you know, it can deliver your car.
I mean, who would have thought? Do you think we'll ever see that in our lifetimes? A car vending machine.
I suppose you can do this in, you know, in like China or you know, in Japan, because Ford isn't big over there.
Yeah.
So you know, the dealers don't stand to lose when a new entrant comes into the market. Yeah. But with a dealer market like South Africa and America, I just don't see a model like that working because the dealer network won't let it work.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, they'll still get to service the vehicles, but I mean, they do make their money off of the sale of the car as well.
Of
course they do.
Yes, that's where the bread and butter of the dealership is.
All right.
Well.
Gentlemen, unfortunately, I'm getting the call sign to switch off. I'm sure we could have carried on, but we'll be back in the next 2 weeks. Remember, guys, have a great week. Hashtag Cody Drag Race 2018 on the 12th and the 13th, and we'll be back in 2 weeks and let you know what went down over there.
This is CliffCentral.com.